Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, thanks for downloading this week's episode of Real Sports Talk Radio. Before we get a quick going, quick shout out to our good friends over at 1-800-Flowers.com. Guys, it's football season, and I know I get caught up and forget about the people around me, and I'm sure you do too. What better way to show them how much you appreciate them than giving you Sundays to watch football by getting them something special from 1-800-Flowers.com. Whether it's your wife, daughter, sister, girlfriend, mistress, or anyone that's special to you, 1-800-Flowers is the way to go. Go to BeckSportsPage.com and click on the link and save a few dollars in order to help keep this show free for your listening pleasure. That's 1-800-Flowers.com. But right now, enjoy the show. Hey, guys. Welcome to another episode of Real Sports Talk Radio, powered by BackSportsPage.com. I am your host. I just learned what Netflix and chill means. I'm a firm believer that Festivus should be a real holiday, and I predict the Knicks are only going to win 30 games this year. My name is Randy Zelia, and thank you for taking an hour of your time and wasting it with me to talk about the world of sports. A lot of stuff going on. If you want to know what this show is about, I take you into a one-on-one interview with the personalities of the sports world and go behind the scenes like nobody else can. That's right. I try to every single week, and I think you guys have trust in me to find a good guest that's going to take you inside the world of sports into a facet of the business or the sport that you never heard before. So you're going to listen to me talk today, for example, Bobby Marks. Bobby Marks is a former NBA executive who's now making the media rounds. He's worked with the Brooklyn/New Jersey Nets for years, for over 20 years. And we sat down and we talked about all the different things an executive does in that position for the basketball operations. We talked about everything from his time working with Willis Reed to when the Nets were flirting with LeBron James back in 2010. We talked about the Jason Kidd era. We talked about everything, and we also had a great reminiscing story we had about Bobby when he was when he first started back in 2000 on one of his first road trips. So there was a lot of great stuff going on. But that's what Real Sports Talk Radio is all about. Basically, what we do is we give you a good guest, and we talk about them, and we talk about their story and how they got there. That's why it's called Real Sports Talk Radio. It's a great introduction to what the real world of sports is all about, not just the games, but we're taking you inside the game and beyond the arena. Real quick, some sports headlines. Derrick Rose injury, and I'm reacting to this. This guy just can't stay healthy, and, you know, I think the Bulls are, like, praying that his contract comes up soon. You know, that's I think that's a given at this point. I think that the Bulls under Hoiberg is going to be a very interesting team to watch. Looking forward to seeing what they are. They bring a lot of pieces back. They got Noah. They have Jimmy Butler. They have, obviously, Derrick Rose. Dunleavy's out with a back injury, so we have to wait till he gets back. You have Taj Gibson. You have Paul Gasol. Very interesting. If they're fully healthy, you're talking one or two in the Eastern Conference. I'm trying to figure out who's going to, you know, beat them if full strength, 100% healthy. Our friends in Cleveland losing Ahmad Shumpert now to another injury. LeBron and company have announced that, or not LeBron, well, maybe it should be LeBron and company, but, David Blatt and company said they're going to try to feature Kevin Love a lot more this year to take the burn off LeBron. And we stopped talking about the NBA Finals, about what had happened, how it was a one-man show for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Just think about Kyrie and Kevin Love played. Man, they would have rocked the house. It would have rocked the house. Some of the other quick NBA, I'm just going to quickly hit the NBA headlines first because we're sort of NBA heavy today. The Knicks are very optimistic right now. or sorry, Carmelo Anthony is saying that the Knicks were going to compete. As I said in my little opening, I don't think the Knicks are more than a 30-win team, and I think they're going to the lottery. That might piss people off, especially my friends who are Knicks fans, but I don't care. I'm telling you the truth. I told you the truth last year, and I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs, so I didn't think they were going to be as bad as they were. I knew they were going to be bad. So before you start killing the messenger about, you know, how bad the Knicks were last year. You know, I told you this was how it was going to be. Maybe people should have a little bit more trust in me and understand that I didn't understand the game of the NBA. I've been behind the scenes. I know the insides and outs. Look, the Knicks were a bad team last year. I said they were going to be bad. The year that they were the number two seed in the Eastern Conference was a, I don't want to say a facade. A facade is the wrong word. It's like fool's gold. It really, they had a good opening month that season and a good closing month. Everything else, they were a 500 ball club. That's what they really were. I thought they were a, when they had J.R. Smith and Raymond Felton and everybody there, but they were maybe a 6-7 seed at best. They were not a 2 seed. So let's be real. Let's really just be real. Dwight Howard. Oh, Dwight Howard, please stop talking. So every single time Dwight Howard talks, something crazy and stupid comes out of his mouth. He recently just told ESPN, an article up there right now on ESPN.com, about how he's not focusing on free agency and that he has 10 to 11 good years left in him. This is a guy who hasn't played a full season. A full season in 4 years. Dwight, you're killing me. You're killing me, Dwight. Stop talking. Stop talking. Other headlines in the world of sports. Adrian Peterson, oh, please stop. Adrian Peterson said he would have been ready to play in the NFL straight from high school. The body, I talked to Brian Leonard, former NFL running back, Rutgers alum, overall great guy. He's the guy, if you ever want to have knowledge of what the NFL is all about, Brian Leonard is the guy, great teammate. He was telling me that the body takes a lot of time to mature, and you're never fully going to be ready from that age to get into the NFL. So that's just – I don't understand why Adrian Peterson even made that comment. Andrew Luck is day-by-day with a shoulder injury. Fantasy owners are flipping out. Same time with Marshawn Lynch. Hamstring injuries, 50-50 for Monday Night Football. Drew Brees should be back this week, ready to go. And Cam Newton, man, like, really? You're not old enough to get these calls, huh? Man, I found that funny. I found that real funny. Just so much. I'm jumping around a little bit just because I just want to hit all the major headlines. I want to go back to something that I was just talking about as far as the NBA. I want to have my NBA preview next week. Danny Thompson from NBA Fast Break or Full Court Press. That's what it is. That's what we'll be joining the show, and we'll talk more about the NBA as a whole next week. And don't forget my Back Sports Page NBA preview will be coming in the next few days. So check that out at backsportspage.com. I will tell you that I am not 100% sure that the Atlanta Hawks are going to be there. And what I mean by there is, to be as competitive as they were. They were a lucky number one seed last year. Again, strong start, strong finish, mediocre medium. Made the conference finals in a weak Eastern Conference because they were able to avoid Cleveland and Chicago throughout the first couple rounds of the playoffs. And they lucked out. And then they got to where they were, and they got swept by Cleveland. I just didn't think they were as good as a team as the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's just how generally I feel. I could be wrong. I think Atlanta had some nice pieces. I like Jeff Teague. I like Al Horford. I like Paul Millsap. Korver is always, he's a one-dimensional player, but he's a good player. He's good at what he does. That's my take on him. I think there's teams that have gotten better. I think Cleveland fully healthy is going to, if they can play consistently throughout the season, they're going to be a better team than Atlanta. I think Milwaukee is going to be much improved. I think there's going to be quite a few teams that are going to improve that have passed Atlanta. Atlanta lost to Mark Carroll, which Toronto, I don't know why they made that move. It still baffles me. It still baffles me. I just wasn't sure to what exactly they were doing there. But say Livy, with all that being said. Atlanta will be a 4-5 seed this upcoming year, maybe a 6 seed. Who do I think is going to be there? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers being the number 1 seed. Let's talk about the Chicago Bulls being the number 2 seed. Let's talk about, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks being there. I think Milwaukee can be there. I think Milwaukee could be there because I think Jason Kidd is a great coach and they're going to have a lot of young players. I think it's going to be very interesting to see where they go from here and who are these 8 teams. And is it even worth having divisions now in the NBA? I'm not sure it is, to be honest with you. I'm not sure it's even worth having divisions in the NBA because – if you're just telling me that's going to be seeded, well, I understand why they're doing it, like Portland last year and so on and so forth. But it was stupid to have that. But, yeah, it's going to be very very interesting to see where the top 8 in each conference are. The West is stacked still. I'm a firm believer of in Pop We Trust. I still love Greg Popovich. I think he's the best overall coach in the NBA. He's led more coaches to assistant coaches to get head coaching jobs in the league. So he is the king of that. And, until told otherwise, I don't see San Antonio being anything less than a 2 seed in the Western Conference. I'm not on the Warrior bandwagon, so feel free to shoot me on that. I'm just not in that mode of believing in the Golden State Warriors. Just not, you know, I just don't believe it. I think maybe the Warriors will end up in 3rd or 4th in the conference. Where does OKC fit? Where do the Clippers fit? Where does Houston fit? These are all good questions. Where do they all fit? They're all very good questions. Bobby Marks is going to be coming up soon here on Real Sports Talk Radio. Spoke with Bobby the other day. Definitely going to enjoy that interview I did with him. Take you inside the NBA. Take you inside the front offices of the NBA. And if you're a Net fan, too, I think you'll appreciate this interview. Discussed a lot about the Jason Kidd era, Vince Carter, Kenyon Martin. We talked about Lawrence Frank. We brought up Avery Johnson, the little general. We talked about the transition and the deals that, you know, we also broke down the salary cap and how the salary cap works in the NBA. We really, we went in depth, which was really, really good, and it was a lot of fun for me. I've known Bobby for a long time, and it was really nice to have him on the air with me or to do this interview because he's such a nice guy that, you know, you can't help but love him because he's, you know, he said the biggest lesson in life that he was able to do is treat people how you want to be treated, because if not, you're going to, you know, it's going to come back and bite you in the butt at the end. So it's really the truth. Very interesting. We're going to have Mr. Seth Kamens from Seth and Sean Sports is joining me right now to help me out a little bit here tonight. So I'm not sitting here rambling like an idiot, which I seem to do more often than not. Seth,
no.
You were rambling like an idiot?
I
can't imagine it.
And just for the record, the last time you were on this show, we had such a nice moment. You complimented me. And,
yeah, that's over.
Yeah. See what marriage life can do to a person.
Tell me about it. Well, yeah. It's what happens when you marry up, and no one doubts that I married way up. So, which is brought up on a continuous basis by Mr. Palmer on our radio show. So, but
I have a couple
for another time. Shoot.
I have a couple questions for you, and you can let me know if you think that I'm crazy. I'm obviously excited that the NBA season has started. For some reason, I just didn't get into Major League Baseball this year, and I'm also, the NFL, obviously, in full gear, but I'm, like, really excited for the NBA this year, and obviously I should because I'm a, I'm an NBA guy. But from what you've seen through the moves through the offseason, am I wrong for thinking that the Chicago Bulls, if healthy, and now it's with Rose having surgery and Dunleavy going down, is there any reason why the Bulls shouldn't be, could be like a number one team in the Eastern Conference?
Yes. It's called LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying that Chicago can compete with them. There's not a doubt in my mind that Chicago can be there. And, I'm not expecting as slow as a start from Cleveland like they had last year. I get that. They just lost Shumpert today. He went down. He's another key part to that team. But he's not as key as, obviously, Kyrie and Kevin Love. And Kyrie's not going to be ready for the beginning of the season. It's not like they're going to be at full force right away.
Well, so I think when you look at Chicago, there are a couple things you have to put into play. I think there's no doubt that they're considered the top two teams in the East. Atlanta, I think everyone thinks, was completely overachieved last year and was, we'll take a step back, relatively sizable. Damari Carroll, obviously, going to Toronto for, I think it was a five-year, $70 million deal. I look at the Chicago team. How many years can Pau Gasol play at this level? Can Joakim Noah stay healthy? How good is Mirotić? Does Jimmy Butler get complacent after getting the big contract? Derrick Rose has orbital surgery and is being arrested under, there are so many questions. Oh, yeah, and they have a new coach. There are so many questions around this team. Or yes, if everything goes together, they can compete, and they very well may. But this is not a team I'm looking at right now and saying at this point I can make any read on them. I think Hoiberg will end up being a good hire. And I think most of the ifs will play themselves out, and they're still deep with Taj Gibson. And is Dunleavy still there? I forget. Or is he's injured, but he's still there, correct? Or is he
gone now? He's injured, and, I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm not disagreeing with anything that you're saying right now. I think you're bringing up legitimate points. There's a lot of what-ifs. But there's quite a few teams, including Cleveland. And then, there's Miami. Miami, who, if you look at their lineup on paper, should be going head-to-head with Miami in the conference five.
Well, from a starting five standpoint, you look at Miami, again, Dwayne Wade has to stay healthy. Is Chris Bosh going to come back and be, what he was prior to? And I see no reason why he wouldn't be. Nobody can read Hassan Whiteside. Luol Deng is a nice player, but he's not a game changer. Goran Dragic is a very, very good point guard. But, it's a team with talent. But we don't know how they're going to gel. I mean, my thought would be they would be competing for one of the top four seeds in the East. Probably, I haven't done any iota. We still have to do our hockey preview, our Major League Baseball preview, and then we'll get to our NBA preview. We actually have the greatest writer in the history of Back Sports Page coming on Monday night. For those who are listening, Keegan Reed making his return to back at Seth and Sean Sports Radio. I would think those three in Washington will probably be my top four. I mean, the East is just a disaster. I mean, excuse me, not the East. The Atlantic is a disaster.
The division winner can end up in the tops as a sixth seed or a seventh seed. That's why I'm wondering if they should even have divisions this year.
Well, the problem is when you have one giant division, one giant grouping, people still like to see division champions. They're still, I mean, does it really have value? Well, if you're not going to count, if it doesn't confirm something for you, if it doesn't give you a home court, does it really have any substantive value? Probably not. But
yeah, probably
there's still
not.
Something to be said for, you know, the Celtics are not going to hang a division title banner in Boston Garden or TD Arena or TD Garden, excuse me. You know, the Milwaukee Bucks may. So for certain teams, there's a value to it. You know, it still has a bit more meaning. You know, you just like the idea of having divisions. And we're hearing about, well, maybe they should just have 1 through 16 across the entire league. Well, I'm not sure that really does you much good either. You know, there's no right or wrong. I don't think there's a definitive right or wrong. And I think the problem always is all these things are always, these are always reactive. You know, we're reacting to the East being weak. We're reacting to, you know, whoever, who was Toronto that won the East last year, that probably would, you know, would have been a 6 seed. Like, I mean, these things are done, nothing's ever done proactively. And that's the problem with everything, sports, society in general, is something happens and you react to it. I don't know. I really wouldn't have gotten rid of the division winners getting a first round bye. I don't see the point. But, you know, I just disagree with it. If you're going to keep the division winners, you're going to keep the division. There needs to be a reason to keep it. And otherwise, why have it in the first place? So anyway, I kind of went a little bit off on a tangent, as I tend to do.
No, it's not at all. It's not at all. And I don't, real quick, I have to ask you, were you not laughing hysterically when Adrian Peterson made the comments today where he's like, I probably could have gone from high school to the NFL? I was like, oh, God.
Well, if there was anyone who could, I didn't laugh because I saw him in college. And there were about 3 running backs in my lifetime who probably could have done it. And he is one, Herschel Walker being the second. I would have to think about who the third would be. But you know the rationale behind this, though, correct? This is to do with Leonard Fournette at LSU, who there is a bigger and bigger rumor that he is going to sit out next year. Because if you've seen him play, and we talked about him actually on the Seth and Sean radio show on Monday, because he played at Syracuse, where Sean drove up 4 hours to go to the game. And the best comparison we could come up with was Bo Jackson, because that's what he is. He's 6'1", 240, and runs about a 4.3. There are no athletes like this. So, you know, you look at what happens, you know, he's a man-child. And, look, it's a really difficult thing when we talk about the high school directly to pro argument, because you should have a right to make a living, whether it's a football or a basketball. And the whole argument against football is you weren't physically mature enough to do it, because most players aren't. He is. So.
I'm totally not disagreeing with you on that either. Like, I found the comments to be sort of ridiculous in some senses, but at the same time, I understand.
Think about it. I mean, think about it from an NBA standpoint. Or college standpoint, if LeBron James came into college in 2010, or he was joining, you know, or he was eligible to play, he was a high school guy who graduated in 2010. You really think he needed to play 1 year at Duke or 1 year at Akron or wherever, or Ohio State or wherever he was going to play? Now the problem is, and you know this, I mean, you're a basketball historian. You know, 3/4 of the guys don't make it, and then they're SOL.
Yeah. But, you know, not for nothing, if you look at the guys who came straight from high school, too, like a guy like Kwame Brown, you know, Kwame ended up having a nice little career in the NBA, bouncing around from team to team to team. Just imagine if you would have actually gotten the education of the game in college.
Many of the guys get – the problem is this. I'm more of the theory either that you can go straight through, but if you don't, you have to stay 2 to 3. You can't leave after 1 year. That's my feeling. There are much worse examples. Kwame still probably made $20, $30 million in his career. You know, you look at a guy, what's his name? They did a documentary on him that he was the one that Lenny Cook, who came from high school and couldn't make it. And there's a zillion of them. And then, you know, Cook got injured and suddenly, you know, he couldn't even go play overseas and have a nice career doing that. So look at, he's 350 pounds and sits at home. I mean, you know, and has no life. It's a very difficult thing. And if you said to me, for both football and basketball, that if you want to come out after your high school year, you can. But the football players are never going to be very rarely are they going to be drafted at the level that they would want to be. Basketball, you only have 2 years. You only have 2 rounds. So if these guys don't think they're going to be drafted, they just go to college for a year. Now you look at these football players, they're not going to put them on a practice squad and develop them for 2 to 3 years. So most of the high school players would never be drafted anyway. I didn't read it just because I've been working most of the day, but Peterson is a freak athlete. I don't think most people could do it. I think he could have.
Well, here's the thing too. We're talking about the basketball side of it. In my recent interview I did with Mike Greenberg, which by the way you can download at the Back Sports Page Radio Network and iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and on the website. Shameless plug.
Way to show yourself, buddy.
Yeah, chill. I interviewed Mike Greenberg and I brought up that point, and I was sitting there thinking that he was going to sort of take the side of, they should raise the age limit to get into the NBA so it helps the college, so on and so forth. And he said, and he sort of took the total opposite thought of it, where he said to me, I would not be one to tell an 18-year-old if someone's going to offer him $10 million to play in the NBA, who am I to tell him he shouldn't be able to not take it because he's not old enough? Like,
okay.
I was just a little surprised with that.
Look, the disappointment that we have is that the college game has regressed significantly over the last 10 years. The caliber of basketball is not as good. The talent, because if they play for 1 year and they go, you're not really developing. It's kind of you're going there as a stopgap. That's why I do think eventually you'll see more and more people do the Brandon Jennings or the Emmanuel Mudiay route and go overseas. Because they don't want to be in college and they don't, this is what their profession is going to be, then they might as well get as good at it as quickly as possible and get forward as much as possible. These guys were playing college and having the time of their life, Brandon Jennings making $800,000 a year playing in China. I see it as a bigger and bigger trend in the NBA.
Last question for you before we go to our special interview this week, which, by the way, I don't know if you heard me who the interview is with this week. This week we have Bobby Marks, former NBA executive for the Brooklyn Nets / New Jersey Nets. He was cool enough to sit down with me this week, and we had a really, really good talk about the office perspective of the NBA. And he actually admitted, you'll hear during the interview, he actually admitted that the hardest thing for him to sit through during the season were the actual games, compared to all the stuff in the office. That's like pretty crazy to hear.
I think it's absolutely true. Sean and I have said the same thing, that it's more interesting. The regular season of most sports to me, the free agent and the trades and all this and that is much more interesting to me than watching an actual game between Portland and Sacramento in the middle of January.
Right.
And besides, if you had the Washington Nets for the last two seasons, how excited would you be to watch those games?
Oh, God. Can you imagine being a Minnesota Timberwolves fan?
Well, at least Minnesota has some talent, and Nets have nothing.
Well, yeah.
As my wife looks very disappointing at me while I say this, because she's still a Nets fan.
And I'd like to introduce you to the couch tonight, my friend. The couch.
Yeah, it won't be the first time nor the last.
Let me do. I got to go, but let me do a quick plug for our show, if you don't mind.
Definitely go for it. Go for it.
Thank you. For those of you who have not heard us before, we're relatively entertaining in my mind. Seth and Sean, backsportspage.com, Blog Talk Radio, Monday night, 7 to 8. 95% of us, of our listeners, listen on, download it from iTunes. Keegan Reed this week. We got Jared Zwirling, formerly of ESPN, formerly of Bleacher Report, who actually called me and asked to come back on the show, which is a nice compliment.
That's awesome, actually.
So this week, we're better than most. So, that should be our motto. We're not too bad. So we got Major League playoffs and NHL preview this week. And we got a couple of special guests coming up in the next few, so it should be good. Randy, thanks for letting me on.
Seth, thanks for calling and helping out. I appreciate it, buddy.
Okay, talk to you soon. Bye.
The great Seth Kamen's always awesome when he comes on the show. Feature interview this week brought to you by NBAShop.com. The NBA preseason is here, and show support for your team and players by shopping at the NBA official online store, NBAShop.com. Show your pride and your fandom by getting gear for your team, whether it's jersey, warm-up gear, hats, and much more. Go to NBAShop.com. They're the official sponsor of our special interview this week. This week's special interview is with Bobby Marks, former executive of the Nets. Very proud of this interview. Take a good listen. I hope you enjoy it.
Bobby, so tell me where did you get your background from? What was your background getting into the sports industry? How did that get started for you?
Well, I have a unique background just because, I was a college football player in college. I went to Marist College at Poughkeepsie and needed to do an internship at a college and was fortunate to get an internship with the Nets in public relations and parlayed that into another internship in basketball operations under Willis Reed in 1995, and was fortunate enough to get hired in January of '96 in a low entry position, and really just worked my way up the 20 years I was with New Jersey, and then the last couple of years with Brooklyn.
What was it like working with a guy like Willis Reed, who is an iconic figure in New York and was a very big part of the Nets organization for a very long time?
Well, I think my dad was more thrilled than probably I was at the time because he remembered him so much. For a youngster, you kind of had to really go back and study up and do your due diligence. But Willis was phenomenal. I still keep in touch with him to this day. He was a great mentor towards me. He showed me, got my foot in the door and, really showed me how to be a professional, it was a great opportunity for me, the 2 years I was under Willis.
Growing up, your dad was a very big fan of Willis, and when you start working for an organization, the fandom, sort of leaves you, and you start looking at it from a business perspective. Was basketball like your first love, or football your first love? Which one was your favorite sport growing up?
Well, I loved football. I played it, when I was starting in third grade, and played it all the way up and all the way up through college. 3 years in college and stuff. And to this day, I love. I love the competitiveness of it. I had an opportunity to go down to Dolphin Camp about a month ago and spend a day down there with those folks and just to see the behind the scenes. And it was a real thrill for me. Just to take a different approach on how in a different sport.
Can you talk about what your role was? I guess the time where, like that 1996-98, what your responsibilities were once you got started working in basketball operations. I don't think a lot of people understand what that position entails. Can you describe that?
Yeah, it kind of came in phases. When I interned there, it was more about, we were a really small department back then. It was myself and a secretary, and so we didn't really have that many administrative people. But I was doing everything and anything, from picking players up at the airport to driving them to practice to working practice to having a towel on my shoulder and doing laundry and sweeping up, you know, sweat and, you know, rebounding and, you know, it was a lot of hustling, long hours. And Coach Calipari came on and, you know, in the spring of 96, so I had an opportunity to work for him for about 2.5-3 years, and a lot of it was the same stuff. I almost served as his, you know, personal assistant for that stretch, and, it wasn't really until, Rod Thorne came in 2000 where I really started to grasp, the salary cap, trades, free agency, draft, kind of the inner workings of how a team is put together and everything, and, for the 10 years that I worked for Rod, I did a lot of, the cap stuff and the comp player contracts. I also handled a lot of our players' off-court needs as far as player development, families coming in, moving, tickets. I did the team travel where I handled all the logistics for hotels and the plane and the food and the buses and the practices and everything in between there. And, when Billy King came in 2010, I was able to kind of delegate a bunch of that responsibility and really just work, focus on, the cap and, trades and draft and free agency, budget, scheduling, and everything. So I would say I probably touched everything that, our department focused on. I even did a little video editing back in, 95, 96. So it was a wide range of responsibilities.
You mentioned Rod Thorne, and Rod was there when I was there briefly, and I got to talk to Rod during one of the rookie camps a few years ago, and he's such a good basketball mind, and he's able to look at things from such a different perspective. Can you talk about how your relationship with him evolved through the time that he was with the team?
Well, he came in, I think, May of 2000. I really didn't have much of a relationship with him when I remember him being at the league office for all those years, and the man who drafted Michael Jordan, stuff like that. And, the first thing I thought right off the bat was we were right around the draft time and stuff like that. And, he came aboard, we handed him a book of scouting reports, and I remember getting a phone call over that weekend, not about what was positive, negative comments about scouting reports, but it was about spelling in the scouting reports, and that was the first thing that, when I think of Rod, I always think of how buttoned up he was with in regards to that and stuff. But we had a great relationship for those 10 years. I was fortunate enough to sit with him through every home game and in the suite when we played in the Meadowlands for that stretch. There was a lot of great moments. He is an ultra-competitive person. He only was out for the best of the team and everything. And, to this day, we still talk, regularly.
And you said you did a lot of work with the salary cap, too. For people who are just the casual fans of basketball, can you explain the difficulty of working the salary cap and what the penalties are if you go over the cap?
Well, the salary cap is different just because it changes, like most sports, because of, the collective bargaining agreement, it changes, every 5 or 6 years and stuff like that. So you constantly have to, stay on top of things. I was not a lawyer. I didn't go to law school. I really self-taught myself, how the CBA works and how the cap works and stuff like that. And it's a complicated, process. I think I've got a good handle on it. I think if you ask any of the 30 teams, they would say that there's always something that kind of pops up that's something new and stuff like that. But, it's different than some of the other sports where I would say 95% of the contracts are guaranteed. So if you do make a mistake, it could haunt you for the long run. But there's a lot of different ways you can, build a team. You can build a team through the draft, through the free agency, through trades. With cap space, if you're a tax team, what are the penalties and stuff like that. So, every team is a little bit different in that regard. But the rules have changed, dramatically when I first came in 95 to where they are now. Even up until, when we had the lockout back in, back in 2011, we had the luxury tax changed, where it became more punitive. You know, we saw that in Brooklyn the first, you know, the first couple of years and everything like that. So it's ever evolving. You know, it's a lot different now too with the new you know, TV money coming in next year. You saw a lot of high deals this summer. You'll see a lot of teams with cap space, you know, next summer, and it will be interesting to see how teams manage that.
You know, you've been on the inside of the Nets for a long time. Jason Kidd had so much success with this franchise as a player. When he left the organization in 2008, when he was ended up being traded over to Dallas, from a management perspective, how difficult was that move internally?
Well, it was difficult, and you know, for Jason's case, you know, he had, you know, basically brought a franchise that was dormant for so long and gave it such a respectability those 6 years that we went to the playoffs, you know, in a row and stuff like that. And I think it was at that time it was time to move on, you know, to give him. We weren't a playoff team at that time. You know, it was time to, you know, give him an opportunity to go out and win a championship, and you know, that was the the direction that. You know, that we took, you know, I look back on those years and you look at what you could have done differently and everything. And I think, you know, what hurt us was that although we still made the playoffs in those years, you know, we had lost Kenyon, then we got Vince back in 04, that, you know, our draft, started to, you know, kind of, you know, fall off a little bit. And we never had those reinforcements coming in the wings, you know, when Jason got a little bit older, when Richard got a little bit older, when Jason Collins got a little bit older, with Vince getting a little bit older, and you know, we had Marcus Williams and, you know, Josh Boone that 1 year, and Sean Williams and Antoine Wright, and you know, besides really Marcus, you know, having a pretty good first year, you know, all four of those guys never really panned out. So we never had the reinforcements coming, and we were, you know, relying a lot of the times on minimum guys. You know, we got fortunate that 1 year with Mikey Moore. You know, we had the Lamont Murrays, you know, those type of guys come through the ranks and stuff. And, you know, we got to, I think, the second round, you know, in 06, 07 and 05, 06 and stuff. And that was kind of, you know, the ceiling with that group. And then when we had to break it up, you know, with Vince gone and Richard, you know, moving Richard and Jason and stuff like that, there wasn't that next layer of players, you know, to kind of pick up everything. That's where you probably saw us have some lean years there.
Can you talk about, because I'm making an assumption here, I don't know this is for a fact, but I'm assuming when we hit that free agency of 2010 with everybody was vying for LeBron, everyone was looking all over the place, you were involved with the meetings with LeBron's camp. I'm assuming that you were. Can you talk about what the atmosphere around the franchise was around that time?
Well, it was hard. You know, we're coming off a 12-70 year. You had a new owner. We were still in Newark, so it wasn't like we were in Brooklyn yet. There wasn't really much of a sell. I would say there probably was no sell at all. So I think the opportunity to even get your foot in the door with, you know, we had three meetings that first day with, you know, with LeBron and Bosh and Wade that night. I think it was an opportunity for our new ownership group to kind of, you know, push, you know, get in front of these guys and really put their vision on where this team was going. I didn't think we had a chance with any of the three guys, you know, but I thought it was good just to get an opportunity. You know, we had meetings set up with, you know, the Rudy Gays and the Carlos Boozers and those type of that next wave of guys and stuff like that, that, you know, Gay, I think, committed to Memphis that first day. And then, you know, Boozer, I thought we had a deal with him, and then he went to go to Chicago, and at the end of the day, that worked out probably the best for the Nets and stuff like that. And you know, you had a lot of cap space. You wound up with a bunch of marginal role players, you know, with Farmar and Morrow and Outlaw and you know, that group right there and stuff like that. Those guys actually turned into, you know, Joe Johnson down the road and stuff like that. But cap, you know, going into free agency when you have a lot of cap space is not always meant to be. You know, it's, you know, there's only a handful of guys that are truly worth that amount of money. Sometimes you get left at the altar, and it's a matter of what you do with that money. You know, you go out, and some teams feel like they got to go out and spend it right away, and some teams can kind of roll over to the next year.
You also went through a transition from a professional standpoint with Rod leaving. How did you handle the transition from going from Rod to Billy, from your perspective?
You you know, it was almost similar to when Rod came in 2000. You know, I didn't really have a relationship, or I didn't have any relationship with Billy in 2010. I had, you know, met him when he was in Philly and stuff like that, and, you know, I was fortunate that he, you know, he kept me on, and, you know, I had a good 5 years there and stuff like that. You know, we were right off the, you know, off the bat swinging for, you know, home runs and stuff. You know, we got involved with Carmelo for the 2010-11 year. That lasted until the trade deadline. That turned to Darren. And then we got into Dwight, you know, right out, you know, we had the lockout of 2011, you know, up until, you know, around Christmas time. So we were involved with Dwight up until, you know, March of 2012. And then, you know, then came, you know, free agency. We did the Wallace trade. You know, we had to re-sign Darren. We did the Joe deal. We, you know, we brought a bunch of guys in that next summer that we made the playoffs and stuff like that. So, you know, there was a lot of moving parts. I would say the last 5 years, we were constantly turning over the roster and as well as coaches too. You know, it's hard when you're constantly on the go and stuff like that, and there's something different, you know, every day and stuff like that. But I thought we did the best with what we had. You know, we were able to go to the playoffs 3 years in a row. You know, the first year was, you know, disappointing, losing to Chicago in the you know, in the first round there, and then, you know, the second year was losing to Miami with those Boston guys and stuff like that. So it was an exciting 5 year period. You know, the last 5 years and stuff like. Before me.
What made you want to walk away?
Well, you know, it was something the Nets, you know, felt like they wanted to go in a different direction and stuff like that. And I respect them, you know, being there for, you know, 20 years and stuff like that. It's actually given me a lot of perspective on, you know, a lot of different things, not just the basketball world, but off the court and, you know, just dealing with working with my family the last, you know, couple months and stuff like that. It humbled me a little bit. But I've you know, built a really good network of friends within this business, you know, in the NBA world as well as in the media world that really looked after me and stuff. And it's opened my eyes to a lot of different opportunities that have kind of presented itself to me. And at the end of the day, it's worked out for the best for me. You know, it's probably worked out good for the Nets, worked out great for me. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to my, you know, my next opportunity. You know, I always say it's like, you know, the kid who lives at home for a while and, you know, his parents love having him there, but eventually you got to move out of the house. And, you know, for me, being and living in or working for the Nets for 20 years, you know, it's given me a lot of different opportunities, and you know, hopefully something, you know, comes around the corner, and I'll you know, I'll move on to that next chapter.
Hypothetically, if an NFL franchise called you up and said, "Hey, would you want to take advantage of it? Because, you know, you are a football guy. You know, you told me that you love football. Is that like a dream scenario there?"
I would. I wouldn't care what they paid me. If an NFL team called me and said, "Hey, I want you to cover the East for scouting and stuff like that," I would jump all over that. I don't know what my wife would say about that and stuff, but I would jump at that chance and stuff like that. But I don't know if we're gonna go that way. I know that when Jerry Krause was with the Bulls, he went up, you know, scouting for the Yankees, doing some baseball and stuff like that. But I still love basketball. I love how you put a team together. I love the, you know, what the success can be. I love the draft prospects. I hate the games, you know, because it's, you know, win or lose kind of really determines you the next, you know, your next day and everything like that. And, you know, I hate when the team's on the road and, you know, I'm not with them and, you know, you're kind of watching on either your phone or you're watching from home. You have really no control over anything. But I still love the, you know, the NBA, and if an opportunity that made sense for me came by, I would definitely take advantage of that.
Okay, so if it's a Sunday afternoon, because I know, again, I'm going to go back to football for a second, and it's NFL Sunday, and Bobby Marks is sitting on his couch, what team is he watching?
You know, I'm a Jets fan, and I'm a Jets fan because, you know, when I grew up, it's not like the day and age where we have DirecTV and you can basically watch every team on, you know, on whatever you want to do, if you're a Jaguar fan or a Dolphin fan, stuff like that. But, you know, I grew up a Cowboy fan back in the early 80s, and only because the Cowboys were, you know, they were America's team, then the Steelers, the Raiders were, you know, the big teams. And, you know, you had CBS, and I guess you had NBC or ABC. You didn't have Fox, and the Cowboys were on a lot. And I became a huge fan of, you know, Tony Dorsett and Danny White and Tony Hill and, you know, that Randy White and that group and stuff like that. But when the Jets moved over from Shea to the Meadowlands in the early 80s, I was able to get season tickets, and I have for almost 20 years. And I just grew up a, you know, diehard Jet fan. So, but I love both locals. I'm a huge Eli Manning fan. We actually named our son Cooper after his brother because it was such a, you know, his story. It was a real inspiration and stuff like that. And we were, when my second son was born, we were stuck on names, and we kind of went through about different things, and we named him Cooper and stuff like that. And but I like both teams. I know you're not supposed to. But I'm, you know, I'm a Jet fan. I'm happy that, you know, that you know, the Giants won last night and stuff like that. But I'm a big fan of both locals.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, I've always said that I wish the NFL salary cap situation was like that in all sports, because, as you know, handling the cap issues, one injury can knock you out, or like you said, a bad decision with a salary can plague the team for a long time. And NFL, there's a little bit of repercussions if you make a cut, but at least a lot of the money will not be there. Do you think that the NBA would ever be able to adopt the NFL salary structure?
You know what? I don't know, and I think that's why you see there's so much parallel in the, you know, in the NFL, where, you know, every year, you know, there's a different team, you know, unless you're, you know, New England, who's been, you know, good for a long time. But, you know, some years you see a team like Arizona, you know, can get pretty far, or if it's New Orleans, and, you know, it'll be interesting when we have the next, you know, the CBA is, you know, up in a, you know, year or two and stuff like that, as far as what stands to the league does. You know, if it's a hard cap like the NFL does, if they, you know, I think you'd have a hard time with the PA as far as, you know, going from guarantee to non-guarantee. You know, that's always the big issue and stuff like that. But there would probably be a lot more parallel if some of these contracts were, if you had a lot more flexibility with some of these contracts.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm like, it's a tough sell to the players' union for that. But yeah, just because, you know, like you just said, like the NFL, you can have a different success story every single year. In the NBA, you usually know going into the season who the top 7 or 8 teams competing for a championship are. And it sort of loses its luster through the winter, knowing that, okay, well, you know, these are the 5 or 6, 7 teams that are going to be there at the end. You know, it sort of takes away from the season a little bit. But that's,
well, yeah, I mean, I think if you're, you know, if you're looking at the NBA, just looking at, you know, as we start camp today, you know, you kind of have an idea in the East who the teams are going to be, and you have somewhat of an idea in the West who the, you know, the teams are going to be and stuff like that. I don't know if you can say that with the NFL, just because there's so much, you know, movement and injuries plays a big part as any sport and stuff like that. I think that's kind of where the ratings, the excitement, the, you know, wherever the revenue comes from.
Do you miss Continental or Izod, whatever you want to call it? You miss that arena?
You know, I love that arena. It was, you know, it was like I was born there. You know, I know it was old and had a lot of deficiencies and stuff like that, but it was, as I saw that place when we had 20,000 people in it, I saw when we had 30,000 people in it, and we had a loyal fan base back then. You know, the people there were as good as gold, the people who worked security and the ushers, and it was a family friendly atmosphere. I can't say that for many places, you know, nowadays and stuff like that, but I do miss that old place.
Iron Eagle always makes fun of me when we do our interviews or we talk, because he knows I'm a foodie. But when you got to travel, when you got to go around the country, what was your favorite state and your favorite food that they had in that state?
Well, I'm a big steak guy and stuff like that, but I love the traveling. You know, I was just out in Utah for a couple of days, spending with the Jazz. I mean, that's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful state. The people are as good as gold there too, and everything. You know, I loved Texas. You know, the 3 cities in Texas and everything. You know, I had the opportunity when we played the Raptors, a couple of years ago in the playoffs, to spend a lot of time in Toronto, and that's a huge melting pot of people, loyal people, passionate fans. You see that right now with the Blue Jays and everything going on. So, you know, I would say there's not a lot of negative things about, each city and everything.
last thing I want to do with you. I love doing word associations with people. Just give me your thoughts when I give you a name. Start with Willis Reed.
Icon. You know, one of the few, you know, I don't know if there's any, maybe people who's, you know, rookie of the year, MVP, MVP of the All-Star game, you know, MVP of the finals and everything, but icon.
Rod Thorne.
Shrewd. And, you know, he, you know, you never wanted to be on the end of a deal. He was a tough negotiator. You know, he was buttoned up. He was well prepared. He was a deal maker.
Lawrence Frank.
Prepared. You know, he was. You know, he had that knock that he, you know, didn't play in college or, you know, or in pros. He worked his way up the food chain. He was as detailed as anybody that I've seen, you know, in practice and as far as game prep, you know, with everything. There was nothing that would surprise him.
Kenyon Martin.
DeMarcus Cousins. DeMarcus these days reminds me of a lot of, like, Kenyon, but I love Kenyon. He was one of my favorite players, and I thought if you could get inside that bubble, he was, you can get in that inner circle. He would, you know, he treated you with the utmost respect. He was a warrior. He, you know, he gave it his all. The fans love him. You know, it was unfortunate that we, you know, he was traded to Denver that year. And he had some pretty good success there and stuff like that. But I love Kenyon.
Vince Carter.
Savior. And I say that because, you know, we had traded Kenyon and we made the Vince trade in 2004. The team was not going anywhere. Jason was coming off microfracture. He really gave a breath of fresh life into the organization for, you know, for 2 or 3 years.
Richard Jefferson.
Clown. And, you know, in a good way. He, he kept these guys loose in the locker room. Players respected him. He was a competitor as well as, you know, all those guys and those great teams we had in the early 2000s.
Avery Johnson.
Avery, besides, you know, the little general, you know, he had, I don't know if there's one word I can describe Avery. You know, it's a shame he didn't get a chance to finish out, you know, the, you know, what he had started in Newark, you know, with the Nets. He was only there for half a year in Brooklyn and stuff like that. I don't know if there's one word that I can describe, you know, Avery. You know, it might be, you know, he had a lot of faith in his religion. He believed in what he was doing, you know, which was a good thing.
I have to ask you one question that I forgot to ask you because I think it's such a very good question. And then I also have a story that it's like a legacy story that I got told about you when I started with the Nets as an intern. The question is, how do you feel that social media has changed the sports industry from what you do, you know, from doing, you know, handling the salaries and the moves that had to be made in trades? Do you think social media has had an effect on it? And if so, good or bad?
Well, I think it's had an effect on it. I don't know if it's been a good effect because, you know, when I worked for the Nets, you know, I was not a big social media guy. I followed people. I didn't really tweet and stuff like that. Just being on the other side of things, this day and age, being more active on Twitter, having a pretty good following and stuff. I just see a lot of stuff that gets reported that's wrong. I see a lot of misinformation that's out there. I think there's only a certain amount of people in the NBA, in the media circuits, that you can trust that puts information out there. I think, you know, and that's been my big thing is that I think, there's a platform for me to put out stuff that's right, that's accurate, that teams want to read, that, you know, that I'm, you know, not doing a favor for an agent, or I'm not, you know, helping the team out, putting information out there and stuff like that, but I'm putting the right information out there and stuff like that. And I think if you do it the right way, social media is great. I think if you fool around with it, and you put out information that you shouldn't put out, I think it's a harmful thing. And that's the same thing that, you know, if it's print or if it's, on TV and stuff like that.
The legendary story that I talk about, when I started as an intern, I sat there in the PR office with Andrew Greenberg and Aaron, and they showed me the infamous Dallas Nets game from 2000. Keith Van Horn hitting the game-winning shot. I'll let you finish it.
Well, we weren't very good then, and I think Don Casey was the coach, and we were playing in old Reunion Arena back in Dallas, and we were playing well. We weren't very good though. I don't know what our record was. We were out of the playoffs and stuff like that. It was the year that Dallas had Rodman. And I'm standing. Usually I would sit behind the bench when I travel, and I would do a lot of chirping at the referees and stuff like that. And I wound up standing in the corner, behind the side of our bench and stuff like that. And it was a close game. We had the ball, and Keith wound up hitting a shot at the buzzer to win it. And I went to go run on the court, and my pants pocket got stuck to a table and wound up ripping a big hole in my pants and everything. And I think those were the only pants I had for the whole trip and everything. And so I learned my lesson, to not react to, on a win, on a last-second shot, because there could be definitely a negative effect to it.
Bobby, I'm saying this on a public forum because I mean it, because it's from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for not only giving me time today, but for all the lessons that you've taught me. I don't think I would have some of the success that I'm having right now without, the talks that we had when I was with the Nets and all the different times we saw each other at the Meadowlands. You've been nothing but a class act, and I thank you for the time, and of course, thank you for everything.
You're welcome. Talk to you, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
Okay.
All right, that was Bobby Marks and me from earlier this week. I really appreciate him taking a few minutes, almost a half hour, talking with me. Thanks for downloading this week's episode. Follow Bobby Marks on Twitter at BobbyMarks42. Follow me on Twitter at RandyBSP, and, of course, Back Sports page at Back Sports page, backsportspage.com/backsportspage. Check everything out. Hey, guess what? I'm done for this week. We'll see you tomorrow night where our next episode. We're doing an extra bonus episode this week, so I really appreciate everyone sticking around and hanging out and doing their thing. I really appreciate it. For me, my name is Randy Zellia, Back Sports Page, Real Sports Talk Radio. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week. I get no doubt.